the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
We've made it to hour number four of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and we look forward to catching up with our good friend Tom Hart a little bit later. But right now, somebody's got the opportunity to reach high above the gathering crowd and grab a golden attaboy as it hangs in the balance with tonight's trivia challenge that is the Sports Fit 6. Jimmy, what is the question this evening?
We are going to fire one out there that is going to challenge our trivia experts. At least I think it will. Okay.
All right.
There are five teams in the NBA that have made the finals, the NBA finals, at least 4 years in a row. Now, the Celtics lead the way. They made it 10 in a row from 1957 to 1966. The Celtics are one of those five teams. Name the other four. Name the Celtics have the most consecutive appearances in the NBA finals. There are four other teams that have made at least four consecutive appearances in the NBA Finals. Name those four teams.
656-9900. 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. If you would throw that question out there again.
All right, the Boston Celtics, they are one of five teams in the NBA that have gone to the finals at least 4 years in a row. Name the other four teams that have made it to the NBA finals at least 4 years in a row. And I think two of these are really easy.
656-9900, 656-9900. We start with Tom. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you today?
Doing well. Thank you.
All right, let's go Lakers, Warriors.
Good start.
Spurs and Miami Heat.
Wow, you did really well right off the bat. You got three out of four. You started strong.
Yeah.
You finished strong. Your guess that wasn't correct was really a good guess when you consider all the success that franchise has had. But you got three out of the four. That's a good job. Good job, Tom.
All right, thanks,
guys. I'll give you an attaboy.
Yeah, there you go. Not a golden attaboy, just an attaboy.
Right, I'll take it.
All right. It's a bronze attaboy. But, yes, well done, Tom. It's tough to go first. Let's go next to Ryan. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, guys. I actually had to change it up a little bit. I think I got Lakers, Warriors, the Heat, and I got, like, three different teams, and it's like a coin flip on them. Let's
gotta see that coin.
Yeah, that's a heck of a coin.
The Knicks was his final guess.
You said Knicks is the final guess?
Yeah, it's probably my last guess.
Unfortunately, that three-sided coin didn't pop on the Knicks, so it is not the Knicks.
Good night. Thanks a lot, guys.
Have a great night. We sure do appreciate it, Ryan. Let's go next to Patrick. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, guys. I didn't hear the first caller because I turned my radio down as soon as the phone started ringing. So I was like, oh, no. Okay, let's go Lakers, Spurs, Warriors. And the Miami Heat.
You got three right. Your second guess was incorrect.
Man. Yeah. Patrick, we sure do appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Have a great night. Let's go next to Brandon. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Brandon.
Hello. Did you guys say aside from the Celtics?
Yes.
Okay. So Lakers, Warriors, Heat, and let's go with the Cavs. I know that.
Let's go with the correct answer. Nice.
Yeah,
Brandon. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
What do you know?
We mentioned the Celtics, 10 in a row. The Golden State Warriors, 5 in a row. And 4 in a row for Cleveland, Miami, and the Lakers. And, of course, LeBron James had something to do with 2 of those.
But, that's right. But according to Paul Pierce, it doesn't mean anything.
Who does he play for? So, anyway, Brandon, you nailed it. That is a correct answer. The other 4 outside of Boston, Lakers, Cavs, Heat, Warriors. Good job.
Good deal.
Well done. And we appreciate everyone that called in to take a swing at and celebrate Brandon and his accomplishment as he showcases some mad trivia skills. He has achieved the rare event that is grabbing the golden attaboy. So we invite him now to hang on and enjoy as much his audio reward.
That is correct.
Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
There's heroes and there's legends. Heroes get remembered, but legends never die.
You are the most influential player on this team.
You're 5 feet nothing, 100 and nothing, and you got hardly a speck of athletic ability. And you hung in with the best college football team in the land.
From the soles of your feet, with every ounce of blood you've got in your body, lay it on the line until the final whistle blows. And if you do that, cannot lose.
Remember when Bobby Boucher showed up at halftime and the Mud Dogs won the Bourbon Bowl, do you?
Pain heals. Chicks dig scars. Glory lasts forever.
I can get used to this winning thing!
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am.
Yes, I've done it.
And that screech tonight is for Brandon, as again, the winner with tonight's trivia challenge, that is the Sports Fix at 6, and we will have another challenging trivia question tomorrow night. But, Jimmy, I don't know that we really broke it down, but everybody is entitled to their opinion, but I just think it is ridiculous that Paul Pierce listed the reasons that he did for not including LeBron in his top 5, saying that he never built a team from the ground up. And
what
does he not remember? That LeBron was 22 when he led Cleveland for the very first time in the history of the franchise. He was 22 when they were swept in the finals by the San Antonio Spurs.
Well, when he went to, there's a reason he got to Cleveland, right?
Yes.
They had whatever amount of percentage of balls in that little container. They weren't very good when he got there. So
no.
I thought what he did was tremendous, and he was he 18 or 19 years old when he entered the NBA?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then he went back to Cleveland, and Cleveland didn't have a lot of great players around him. To me, there wasn't a whole lot of difference of what LeBron James had surrounding him versus what Michael Jordan had surrounding him, depending on what year it was,
right?
With the Cavs versus the Bulls. So I thought LeBron getting Cleveland not only to the finals, but to win it, I thought that was pretty spectacular. So, not having LeBron in the top 5 makes me question anybody's ratings.
Yeah, and how many titles did Paul Pierce win without Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen?
Wow.
I'm thinking that he won as many as you and I did.
Yeah, big old donut there.
Yeah. So, but again, I don't expect much from Paul Pierce as an analyst. I didn't expect much from him as a player, except for an incredibly dramatic exit from a game, only to return mere moments later when it looked like he would never walk again.
Yes. Yep.
But anyhow, I digress. Good news is I don't take it personally.
Yeah, I can tell.
We'll get a break. When we return, we look forward to catching up with our good friend Tom Hart of ESPN and the SEC Network. That's next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
To take the latest on Tennessee sports coverage with you anywhere you go, download the Sports Radio WNML app. Powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, where we get to say hello to our good friend, longtime friend, Tom Hart of ESPN and the SEC Network, doing a fantastic job of encouraging those to make most of any downtime by reading and other things like that. Classic games, commentary, you name it. It's all available at Tom_Hart if you want to follow along on Twitter. Tom, how are you?
John, I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me today. Always great to chat with you guys.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time and certainly hope that the Hart household is safe and strong through all of this.
Yeah, well, we're not very strong, but we're safe. We've never been a strong household. We decided we weren't going to make varsity years ago, so we gave up on the weightlifting. We're just kind of trying to slide through life.
Very nice. As we wait for the return of activity, we have seen a number of classic games, and normally you would have just finished an incredibly busy week with the SEC tournament in Hoover and would have enjoyed, like the rest of us, another selection Monday with Memorial Day and would now be, of course, waiting to jump on board with whichever regional assignment you would have drawn. How different has this spring been, considering that it's been more than 10 weeks since we've seen college baseball?
Wow, 10 weeks. That's unbelievable. It's been, you know, I've never been through it in my life as an adult, in my life, you know, in total. But I was thinking the other day, I don't remember, you know, I started working in minor league baseball before I earned my degree from Missouri. I don't remember having Memorial Day off ever. You know, even if it was Memorial Day weekend and I was working on the TV side and calling SEC baseball or ACC baseball or combination of both, and then getting ready for the NCAA tournament, which I've been lucky to do for years. So it's a new reality. It's sobering in many ways, and it helps us appreciate, in my mind, just what we have when we do have it. And it's caused me to do more planning and looking ahead to see, you know, hey, what's next? When will this stuff start back up? And what will college football look like if we can get there? And how many lives have been impacted by this just on the sports side of it? That's obviously where we focus. But so many people have been impacted in a negative way. I look forward to the chance and the time where we can impact lives in a positive way.
Hey, Tom, do you think that regarding college football, the NCAA should step up and say we need to have uniformity? Or do you think because certain areas are better off than others that they should allow the conferences to make those determinations?
Jimmy, that's a wonderful question. By the way, I'm glad that these decisions aren't on my head because there are some really tough decisions being made on campuses and in conference offices across the country. I look at this two different ways. I think that we need to understand that in anything we do, and if we want to dial this down to college football, it fits. In anything we do, we are codependent on others. You know, people within the SEC are codependent upon their conference mates to make sure that they are doing everything that they can to make sure their facilities are clean, that their players are healthy, so that when they do meet on the field, whether that's college football or women's soccer or volleyball, that everyone is as healthy as can be. And they're also codependent upon what, you know, non-conference opponents. And I think that can get really tricky when you ask for people who don't have the same budgets that exist in the SEC to take the same level of precautions. But because not only is this different geographically and in different hotspots and affecting major cities different than rural areas and vice versa, and kind of moving like an amoeba throughout our country. I think not only should conferences have the ability to call their own shots and figure out what's right for them, but then there will be individual schools within those conferences who might say, you know what, it's not right for us to play. Or while you guys may not be ready to play, we are, and it fits us. So I think individuality with respect to codependency, which sounds like a contradiction, I think that should rule the day when it comes to making decisions based on when you start practicing, when you start playing, and most importantly, who do you play and can you keep your players safe?
So do you think that the SEC could possibly say, okay, we got 12 teams ready to play, let's go, but these other two are not, so you can sit this out? Do you think the SEC would proceed under those circumstances?
I 100% believe they would. I think, the American Conference under Commissioner Mike Oresko has already said that they would go that direction. Geographically, they're way more spread out than the SEC is. But you just look at, leadership from a political standpoint, and there are states taking different tacks right now. I live in Atlanta, as you guys know, and what we've been doing in Georgia is drastically different than what's been happening in Kentucky to this point. Not to say that we won't end up at the same point in the future, whether that be July, August, September. But yeah, there's people going different directions. And Mike Oresko even said, listen, our partners in the American Conference understand that if two of them can't play, they're not going to hold the other nine back. And I believe that to be the case in the SEC. I think that if there's one or two programs that aren't allowed to play, either because of their local politics or because their campus simply isn't safe, I don't think they would hold an entire conference back, nor do I think they should. And if the shoe was on the other foot, and this is unprecedented in many ways, but who knows what lies in our future, I think they would expect and respect the same from their conference mates if they found themselves in a different situation in years to come.
Our guest, Tom Hart, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, Tom of ESPN and the SEC Network. What has it been like to just see, and you, I'm sure, been a part of some of these conversations yourself with all the Zoom teleconferences and or press conferences, whether it be a player switching teams in the NFL or coaches allowing themselves to chat when they would have been recapping spring practice, things like that. What has it been like to look at the new form of communication for so many to stay up to date?
Well, I think it's really neat in many ways, John, because you get to learn a lot more personalities. And I know this is a little bit different than what you're asking about, but I thought the golf this weekend was just sensational. Those of us who have spent any time around Peyton or the Manning family expected that level of sense of humor and the ability to play to a room that came from, comes from Peyton, obviously, but obviously originates in Archie. And I thought he was wildly entertaining. The lines that he had about refusing to wear Tiger's Sunday red because he didn't want Kirby Smart putting any pictures on social media was fantastic. And seeing, Tom Brady, who's married to a supermodel, struggle in any aspect of his life. I think for people who weren't Patriots fans, they got a kick out of that. But then when he hold that shot from 110 or whatever the distance was, I thought, you know what? What a perfect snapshot of why us duffers love golf. You can play terrible all day, and you're going to hit that one shot that's going to keep you coming back. And if it's good enough for Tom Brady, it's good enough for a lot of people. And I just think it's interesting to see of the sports personalities out there, those people who find it important to reach out to their fan base and to be accessible and to show their personality. I think that's been really neat to follow. And let's not make any mistake about it. I think probably some of them are doing it because they're bored. And we've all been a little bit bored over the last 2 months. There's no doubt.
Well, I don't think there's any question in that regard. There was the saving grace that was The Last Dance, and then there was also and we've been blessed to carry, and we will again this Saturday, Vol Network Classics, whether it be football or basketball. We've seen a lot of classic games replayed. As busy as you have been, and some of your work has also been highlighted by ESPN or the SEC Network, have you had the chance to catch a game that perhaps you didn't get to earlier because you were simply working somewhere else that day?
You know what, John? This might sound sacrilegious to some, but I've actually taken a pretty good-sized break from sports altogether. You know, when I get up in the morning, the scoreboard I check, it comes from the CDC. And I encourage everyone to educate themselves and to follow the numbers and be as wise as you can to what's going on. It's never too late to educate yourself and to be able to follow these trends and make decisions based on you and your family and being safe and being healthy. And I love The Last Dance. I watched every minute of it live, and I devoured it, and I talked about it with my friends, and we all grew up in that era, and we loved Michael Jordan and the Bulls. But I haven't been in a mood to really go back and watch any really old games. It's been a nice break just to be with the family and to kind of be low key and to not have to, you know, we all live our lives, I think, similarly, that even when we're not working, if it's 7 o'clock on a weeknight, whether the Braves are playing or the Reds are playing or, you know, it's Monday Night Football coming around, we rush to the TV and turn it on and we're glued to it. And I think it's been a nice break for a lot of people to say, you know what, let's eat dinner at the table with the family and let's sit down and watch Harry Potter or something that we can do with the kids. And when sports come back around, I'll be primed and well rested and ready to go.
Well, then you can give us the honest interpretation. How pleased was your son with joining the Hart family tradition of dad cutting son's hair?
Well, he was as pleased as any Hart kids have been, which is not pleased at all. he didn't understand why it was necessary, and it was finally my excuse to break out the clippers and go to work. When my brother and I were in grade school, we infamously had one of those nights, and I showed up to school the next day with a cut above my ear, and my brother showed up with a stripe up the back of his head. So continuing that tradition, totally unintentionally, but my son did go to bed with a scab on his ear that night where the clippers got away from me, and I told him, I said, listen, as soon as this pandemic is over, you never have to deal with this again.
Tom, I want to get your take on Oklahoma. So they have announced that they're going to reopen things for athletes to return July the 1st. Now, what I find interesting about that is that there were a couple of coaches out there, like Brian Kelly and Will Muschamp, that said they need 8 weeks to get ready. Well, Lincoln Riley said, hey, we only need 2 weeks to get ready. Would that surprise you at all, then, that Oklahoma would be opening later than probably most other Power 5 schools?
Well, Jimmy, it's so interesting. Everyone kind of has their own game plan, and that's what I found very interesting. I actually was in an athletic director's office last week in the SEC, and he was walking through their game plan and how they're going to reopen and what they were going to do, and it was different than I expected, and it was different than I heard at other schools. And I think it goes to show that every school is leaning on their experts, either on campus or through their connections, epidemiologists and scientists and doctors and such. And they're all getting information that's a little bit different. Lincoln Riley made no bones about it early on. He said, we can't return to play football. We're not going to be ready. And I thought he took a pretty staunch stance right out of the gate. You know, if you remember, so too did Matt Campbell, the head coach at Iowa State, and he had a great take on it, I thought. And he played it at Mount Union and coached at Mount Union, a Division III powerhouse, and he said, listen, at Mount Union, we didn't have spring ball. We didn't have summer, you know, organized workouts and conditioning. You went home for the summer. You worked out on your own. You showed back up. We had a few weeks of practice. We went out and played, and they win national title after national title. And I thought, what a huge advantage for these coaches who have done more with less over the years. What an advantage to not have those expectations, not just within their program, but also in their own heads and within their staff. And I thought there are guys who approach it that way who are going to be at an advantage mentally with their program. So everyone's going to be coming from a different direction. You know, we don't know if Michigan is going to be holding classes. If you listen to their president, we don't know if they're going to have a football season, even though Ohio State has said they will. We don't know what's going to happen in the state of California. I think
especially schools like Stanford and UCLA, there's reason to question if they would be able to start on time. And even if, I think what needs to be remembered is that even if everything goes to plan within these football programs and they start on time, that doesn't mean every key player is going to be there on time. And so what do programs look like on September 5th versus what they look like on November or December 5th? And do we take into account, and this is putting the cart way before the horse, Jimmy, but do we take into account how teams will evolve over the course of the season when they will get off to such an uneven start? It might be a good time for all these coaches to reread the parable about the tortoise and the hare, because it will be how you finish, not how you start.
Do you think that there's a chance that we will see some games without fans and then other venues with 30%, 50% of fans in the stands?
My opinion on that changes with the wind, Jimmy, and it's just my opinion because I only go by what we hear from news reports and folks that we talk to. But like I said before, everyone has a different attitude. If you would ask me that 3 weeks ago, I would have said there'll be no fans in the stands, no way, no how, at least through September, and maybe they come around in October, November, and wouldn't it be a great celebration if the SEC championship was sold out first weekend of December and they could go from there. That tune has changed on local campuses, as we know recently. So if you ask me today, I would say, well, most schools would probably have, you know, a 30% capacity or the like, but we got to just be smart about this because what we learn and what happens evolves every day. And where we were, even just looking at the CDC numbers, where we were 10 days ago in Georgia looked great. Where we are today does not look so great. Our highest, and I know this is based on, you know, the testing capacity, but our highest rate of infections was not in mid-March or early April. It was 9 days ago in the state of Georgia. And if we stay that high, well, it's going to be really hard to put people in football stadiums. If we can get that back down, maybe we look at it differently. To answer your question, I'm not a betting man except to say that expect the unexpected. We'll probably change our mind three different times before we get to September 5th, and I'm knocking on all the wood around me that we can have live college football on September 5th.
Tom, do want to ask and get your reaction to the fact that the XFL is up for sale and you've got at least 20 that have completed the paperwork to show they're interested in making a bid for it. Six more, either individuals, organizations trying to do the same to put their hat in the ring. And then there's even the suggestion by somebody that says the NFL should step in and take over the league so it could be diverse, add depth, and do so much to kind of create its own feeder and or minor league with spring activity, kind of like a version of winter ball that you see in Arizona. Just what are your thoughts on the interest in the league that you worked for a month?
Well, we got halfway through the season. It was wildly successful, especially when it came to television ratings. The attendance was better than I expected, especially in some very specific markets. Guys, I should have sent you the email. I mean, we could have put together some coins from our couch cushions and put in a bid. I think it's very wise. Somebody's going to get this league for pennies on the dollar, and I think it could be wildly successful long term. There are just so many talented football players out there that don't get an opportunity because that practice squad window closes on you really quick. And as we know, maturation for football players, it occurs at different speeds and different schedules. And I saw real value in some guys that that took the field. P.J. Walker for Houston, Jordan Tiamu played for the St. Louis team, got picked up by the Chiefs. Those are just a couple quarterbacks. There's a lot of other guys out there that prove their worth. I think it's going to come back, and that might be wishful thinking on my behalf, and maybe if it doesn't come back next year, it's 2 years down the road. But I think there's a market and an opportunity for good football in the spring and in the summer.
I can very much appreciate your sharing exactly that you caught a little break and tried to spend more time with not doing as much with sports as you normally would be at this time of year. What is the best book you've read in this last three-month period or two and a half month? And what's the best show that you've streamed, perhaps?
Oh, that's a great question. I've had a handful of really good books. Eric Larson's book, The Splendid and the Vile, was based on diaries from World War II in and around Churchill, his daughter, and the Nazi PR guy Goebbels and the bombings of London. It was just fascinating. And there were some very much some similarities into what they were going through at the time in terms of what London was going through and what our nation's stresses have been over the last 2 months. It was interesting to see the leadership differential between, you know, what Churchill did from an information standpoint. And Beneath the Scarlet Sky was another one that I really liked, and I'm reading one now. I'm usually into nonfiction, but a fiction book called Bear Town, which is about a youth hockey team up in the Northeast, which has been really good. And to dial it back, we went back and we watched all the Harry Potters with the family, and that stands up. That's pretty good. I did also, sidebar, I made my kids watch Tommy Boy make sure that they were, you know, along the same trend that I was at that age, and they all got a kick out of it.
That's wonderful. That's fantastic, and that is sound and solid parenting. Hey, Tom, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much. We look forward to doing this again much sooner rather than later. But thanks for your insight, and can't wait to catch up with you again.
Anytime, guys. Always a pleasure to be on with you. Be good and be safe.
You thanks, as well. Tom. Thank you. Tom Hart of ESPN and the SEC Network, always gracious with the amount of time that he gives us. We'll get a break and be back with more. This is Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
I know it's hard to keep up, but we ain't slowing down. 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk rolls on with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
John, Tom Hart is convinced that if 12 of the 14 SEC schools are ready to play football, they will do that. Are you as convinced as Tom on that topic?
I think so, simply for the fact that I just think it would be a necessary path to take. I also think that if you were fortunate enough to where you had, just say, two teams that couldn't jump at go time, then you might have an opportunity for those two to perhaps be a travel partner and or a school that you could play. That's one of the more interesting scenarios that's been thrown out. If you do have uneven teams available in a conference to play, do you have multiple meetings within a same conference for this year only? So if a team had to make up a game, you knew exactly who they could pull from the pool of available schools to perhaps make up for a missed game or two. I think that there's merit to it. It obviously might not be the most equitable split, and that's coming from a part of the conference in the Eastern Division that has to play Alabama every year. But there are other schools that could also say, oh, yeah, well, we play this school every year. I just think that that's some of the plans that have made the most sense in, hey, just in case. That, to me, is one that has been interesting, because there had been previous years long ago where you did have occasionally, on rare instances, a team that would play each other twice in a given season.
Yeah, I think under these circumstances, fairness takes a back seat to finances. I think you got to go. I think you got to play if you can, and mm-hmm. it is safe, and maybe you can't do it in Missouri, or maybe you can't do it at Vanderbilt, and the others are ready to go. I think you go ahead and play it. And I also would not rule out the possibility of playing non-conference opponents if that non-conference opponent isn't coming from California or New York. There's nothing wrong. Charlotte's not that far away. If perhaps you had ETSU or MTSU on your schedule, mm-hmm. play them. So I think it depends on where that team is. Going to Oklahoma might be a little bit dicey for Tennessee this year. We'll see. But I think UAB's not that far away. So I think there's some games that could be played non-conference-wise. It'll be interesting to see what they end up deciding on that. But I think that you're not going to get many arguments about, oh, this isn't fair. You need to play. Let's worry about fairness next year. But you need to play if you can. And I'll bring this up again. The finances for the athletic departments is incredibly important, but don't lose sight of the millions of dollars these universities are losing, because if they don't have football, and football in that athletic departments donate millions back to the university, then that's hurting the universities. And if for whatever reason you have to cut sports and you end up not having as many athletes on scholarship, well, that scholarship money is paid by an athletic department back to a university. So that's a lot of money that a university is losing. So it's not just an athletic department. It is a university that is it's very important that you try to make sure that you're going to take a bit of a bath. Just try not to get soaked. Try not to drown.
Yeah. Let's get a call from Brandon. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Brandon.
Hey, guys. How are you this evening?
Doing well. Brandon. Hope you are.
Yeah, driving home from work, 10, 12 hours. Another day of driving. So, hey, Jimmy, you actually jumped in ahead of me what I was going to say. While we are going to have college football this year, okay. What's the standard? I mean, if you go across the whole spectrum of Division I stadiums, what's the average capacity, you would say, between all of them? Around about 80,000?
For SEC stadiums?
No. All Division I stadiums.
If you all just Division kind of, one? Gosh.
Yeah.
What makes that
about
hard?
80.
I'm going to go a little bit less than that, because you got a lot of stadiums that seat between 30 and 50.
Yeah, I think so, in the 70 to 75 range.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's keep that number in mind.
You could go 85 in the SEC, by the way, but go ahead.
Yeah, let's keep that number in mind. About 15 years ago when I met my wife, she was working in the athletic department at UT. And after the gate, after the game had closed, this was 15 years ago now, the receipts totaled between merchandise, food, so forth and so on, $990,000. That's what was the money take was brought into that stadium that night in about 4 hours. You do the inflation, the math, and everything else like that. A $20 shirt back then cost you $30 now. A $15 hat back then cost you $25 now. You were exactly right. Basically, every home stadium that has 75,000, 80,000 capacity is going to be losing $1 million, basically, if they don't have fans there. And that's why, love is a good thing, but money makes the world go around. And that's exactly why we're going to have college football. What do you think? I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I think we are, and I'm glad that we are. We just need to make sure we keep it as safe as we can. I don't know that I think there will be many stadiums that will be at full capacity. I think we will see limited access. And I think there may be some stadiums that elect to have no fans. But I think there will be some situations where you're at 30%, maybe as much as 50% capacity. That could depend on what the numbers look like between now and late May and August 30th. That could be a factor. Although some schools, I'm sure, would like to make decisions earlier than that. There was one school, I think it was Iowa State, that said they had like a deadline of June the 12th to buy season tickets, or else you're running the risk of not being able to get into the game. Okay. But there's still a lot that could change between now and late August. And of course, if you don't sell that many season tickets and you put a deadline on it, perhaps you might be able to sell some tickets, general admission type seating. Well, not general admission, but single game tickets is what I'm after. You might be able to do that. But, gosh, there's just so much between now and then to scope out and see where we are. But hopefully things get better and people don't do away with this social distancing and trying to adhere to the advice we've been given about trying to stay safe. Because the worst thing that could happen is for us to have another outbreak and then to cancel everything. Can't afford that.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. We'll be back with more. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. That's how you join Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
If you smell something, that's probably us. We are 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Back to wrap up today's edition of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. To get a question or comment in under the wire, 656-9900, 656-9900. Let's check in with Larry. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Larry.
Hey, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Doing well. Hey, hope you are.
Doing great. Actually, two quick questions. Number one, would you all feel differently if Tennessee was one of the schools that didn't play because of this pandemic? All of a sudden, let's say something happened, we didn't play. Or like Alabama, would the SEC be have a different attitude if those two schools said they wasn't going to play?
That's hard to answer, but if 12 others could and those two can't, I think the SEC would go ahead.
Okay, and then the next question is, would we still be able to split it up enough to have an East and West, or would we, if we just played each other, would we have the best team overall record be the SEC champ, or would we take the first and second place and play a game?
I don't know. The ideal situation would be to take the teams with the two best records and have division champs if you can, and then play in Atlanta if you can.
Yeah.
John, if you can't, I wonder if there's going to be some maneuvering. Let's say that 11 teams are ready to go and three aren't. Then you may have to alter your schedules a lot and just try to play more conference games in an effort to identify your better team, the best team, and then you may not even have an SEC championship game. You may just declare a regular season champion based on the best record within the regular season. You may have to.
For the conferences that have been more outspoken about potentially playing conference games only, I think that's one of the things that they're weighing, and that would be the opportunity to make up for lost weeks, whether it be at the start of the season or perhaps in the middle of the season, that they would have these open weeks and opportunities to go ahead and make good on there being a uniform number of conference games played. I haven't seen anybody say that they would look to do something different other than hosting a conference championship game. But my guess is that it's been discussed. So I don't know if it would go right back to how it used to be, where it would be the best overall record that you recognize as the champ, or exactly how that would work. But my guess is they would very much want to do as much as they could to meet the inventory necessary TV-wise to get that conference title game played.
Okay. That's about what I mean. That's kind of what I figured. It may be the best overall record, but, you know, if it come down, you know, say if it was like Tennessee and Alabama, you know, if they both had the same record where they already played each other, would they go head-to-head or would they play another game?
I think they'd go head-to-head.
Yeah.
I don't think they would come back and try to play another game. Unless one's winning the East, one's winning the West, and then you have a rematch in Atlanta, if that's possible.
Right, okay. Is there a certain amount of teams that they've discussed that would make the SEC not want to play?
Well, I would say this. Have they discussed that? I am sure they have. I don't know the answer. My thinking would be, boy, you've got to have at least eight. I think if you don't have eight, then I'm not sure if you go forward. But I'm sure there's been discussion about that, and what number they've arrived at, I do not know. But, John, I would think you'd want to go eight is the minimum. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I do think that that they would want to get to that number for sure. And, you know, again, these are questions that I think that at some point that Greg Sankey will probably address in terms of contingency plans. I can't wait to hear when that happens. Hopefully it'll be in Atlanta at SEC Media Days if that's able to go on.
I will tell you this, John. I know the SEC is kind of asking around to see how many people from the media would attend the SEC Football Media Days in Atlanta, which I think is a good sign for them to actually have it rather than go virtual. So
yes.
And if they do have it, hopefully we'll be down there covering it. It's a great event in an effort to get a whole lot of content and talk to a whole lot of football. So I would certainly look forward to that if that occurs.
Yeah, we've been doing it consecutively for quite some time, so it would be, I think, a very good sign if the SEC were able to hold the event as it has again this year in Atlanta. I guess it'd be the second time in 3 years in Atlanta.
That's correct. But if enough media people say they're going to go, I think they'll have it.
I think they will. Jimmy Hyams, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Can't wait for tomorrow's show.
Thanks, John.
Sure to appreciate that. We'll remind you, an encore presentation of In the Cage coming your way at 8 o'clock. This is Sports Talk.